SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
It's a Football Friday ahead of a holiday weekend live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. Would you look at who is back? It's Joe Lisi, the mastermind of the pigskin, live right here on this Friday. And I am Ben Stevens. Lisi guy, over this next hour, up until 1 p.m. Eastern time, there is so much to discuss. This week, it's been OTAs all across the National Football League. We'll look at some NFL news and notes and a monumental and historic day, potentially a landmark type of ever-changing day in collegiate athletics yesterday as well that will have ramifications for college football in the years to come. All of that, Lisi guy, on FFC.
Yeah, and, you know, the summer months really provide an opportunity for a lot of these teams to see exactly what they have in terms of the NFL, right? You know, the rookies come in. Is there any type of, you know, continuity with the offense and defensive units for the young quarterbacks that we're going to talk about throughout the offseason, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and all the rest? Can they hit the ground running? I saw Jaden Daniels hit Jahan Dotson on an absolute dime. Now, I don't want to get overexcited, but that's the type of glimpses that you want to see in terms of these OTAs that maybe, just maybe, give you an inside track on providing some value throughout the NFL season.
Maybe, just maybe, you got Joe Lisi thinking about that Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Jaden Daniels. Don't show that clip to Kevin Walsh. He might be fading the Commanders win total to the under as we speak. But Lisi guy, we start in college football and really the entirety of collegiate athletics. This week was a monumental landmark week in the history of college sports, and yesterday it came to a head. May 23rd, 2024 might be looked back on as a day that forever changed the history of college sports. The NCAA's Board of Governors and all of the power conferences have agreed to a settlement to settle the lawsuit that is known as House versus NCAA. We will not get into all the legal jargon and logistics, but pretty much what you need to know. Based on the settlement agreement, for the first time in the history of college sports, the NCAA has now given permission to its member institutions, those are the schools, the colleges, and the universities, to directly pay its college athletes. There is now revenue sharing on the horizon in college sports. And that, Joe, is a landmark day, a landmark moment, because for the first time in more than a century of collegiate athletics in this country, players can share in the revenue of which they contribute to, and universities can directly pay their athletes.
Yeah, it's an amazing decision. You know, the Arizona State swimmer that started in house, I mean, finalized yesterday, and it is a step to really, are these student athletes, if that's what you want to call them, employees now, right? I mean, they're earning money on the football field or on their respective sports to generate revenue for the university, generate revenue for their potential individual gain. And where does that put them in terms of the amateurism, in terms of the whole logistics, financial situation, right? This is definitely going to benefit the top teams, the teams in the SEC, the teams in the Power Four that are at the top, the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Michigan, Ohio State. Those kids are going to get a little bit more than the other kids at a group of five or a smaller type of school, but this is a precedent. We were headed this way, and it's just the tip of the iceberg, Ben. We'll see how this plays out in regards to just how we view these student athletes moving forward if other repercussions and legalities arise. But this is what it's all about now. It's about the brand, it's about capitalizing, and it is about the revenue. I just hope now the product doesn't take a hit in terms of the long run.
And that's one of the main questions, Joe, I think from the fan perspective. We have known college sports, even if we've had issue with how college sports have been run in this way for a century, maybe even as of late in the ever-changing climate, this conference realignment, in the transfer portal era, in the NIL era in college sports that has left many fans a little bit disillusioned with the product. But the idea being the actual games that we care about, those Saturdays during the fall, the NCAA tournament in men's and women's basketball, whatever it might be at the non-revenue producing sport level that tie you intrinsically to your favorite school, to your favorite university, where your dad or mom went to college, where you went to college, all of what we love in college sports, is that as a whole, is that as a product going to change because of the business and logistical aspects? Those are questions that are fair to answer. My guess would be immediately, no, it's not going to look all that much different just because colleges and athletic departments can directly pay collegiate athletes. And there's also the idea, Joe, of what exactly is this system going to look like? Here's a few things that we do know as of this moment. The settlement was to the tune of $2.776 billion, with a B, billion dollars that the NCAA now has to pay out over a 10-year period in back pay and damages to collegiate athletes at the FBS level, mainly football and men's basketball from 2016 to 2012 because they missed out on NIL opportunity. So those will be paid out to the tune of $2.7 billion over 10 years. About 40% of the revenue comes from the NCAA as an organization itself. About 60% of the revenue comes from those member institutions at the power conference level. Notre Dame is included in that group. When does this new change in college sports begin? More than likely, Joe, in the fall of 2025. How much are college athletes or athletic departments going to be on the hook for? That figure is very much in flux and ever evolving, but most reports estimate it at about $20 to $22 million per year at the power conference level paid out to its athletes. Exactly what that paid distribution looks like is actually under the control and the discretion of the university and athletic department. And again, this is the power conference level, which at the FBS level remains the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC, along with Notre Dame. Although the Pac-12 did agree to this because of what they used to look like, no longer a power conference moving forward in the fall of 2025, Joe, when most of this is expected to begin.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a ton of great points, and it's really going to come down to, you know, the sport. It's going to come down to the institution. It's going to come down to sponsorship, and that's the biggest thing, too, is we know certain schools, and I keep going back, the Oregons, the Alabamas, the LSUs, they have more money behind them than a lot of other schools do, right? So, you know, those kids, let's say a kid in the MAC, is he going to then all of a sudden right. leave because the money is greater at a bigger institution, and now those other schools are affected from a monetary aspect, they're affected from the product on the field, and nobody wants to see that, right? You know,
right.
The biggest thing that college football has done in recent years is it sort of leveled the playing field with the TV contracts, where kids didn't want to maybe leave their local area because they're always on TV, right? You know, it used to be different where Notre Dame had that one huge contract with NBC. Now every school is basically televised. This is yeah. now another game changer to that in terms of the kids want to get as much as they can to capitalize on that window because not all of them are going to play professional sports, Penn.
Right. And so really when you think about it, Joe, there are different levels to the TV revenue. It's why the Big Ten and the SEC really are the big two, even within the power conference level. It's why the Pac-12 is no more because of bad business in terms of TV revenue and rights deals negotiations. That's a huge reason why all of this is taking place and why the numbers are so drastic. It's because of FBS level football that is the main economic driving engine to the billions and billions of dollars of revenue that have been at stake in collegiate sports for a very, very long time. And everybody's been getting fat. Everybody's been profiting off of this system, except for the athletes, at least in direct revenue sharing. That is what is mainly changing starting in 2025, more than likely. Plenty more in this discussion because I know it's new and I know it's a little bit confusing. We'll continue to make it as easily digestible as possible. Up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle. It is Friday, May 24th, 2024, the day after the day that more than likely changes the entire direction and future of collegiate athletics. If that sounds a little bit grander, well, that's because of where things actually stand. Now, starting now, but although the system will probably be put into place in about a year, but based on a settlement agreement, the NCAA now gives permission to its member institutions, schools, colleges, universities, to pay their collegiate athletes directly through a revenue sharing system. Again, what is this going to look like when it is more than likely put into place starting in the fall of 2025? Power conference schools, that is going to be within the start of 2025, the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, and Notre Dame are going to be more than likely, although this number is subject to change and more than likely will, on the line for about $20 to $22 million, almost like a salary cap that will be distributed to its collegiate athletes. How exactly is that system going to work? Does your star quarterback get X amount? Does everybody get the same amount? What exactly is that going to look like? That remains to be seen. Title IX will have an effect, it would seem, and how those payments are distributed. But more than anything, Joe, the watershed moment is the idea that for the first time in more than a century of college sports in this country, colleges and universities can directly share revenue with their athletes, and that is big news.
Yeah, it is. It's landmark, right? The first case was the Ed O'Bannon case years ago, right? And we know how that turned out. This really changes the pendulum. This recognizes, and it comes from the NCAA, obviously paying this money, that these schools and these institutions that gain revenue now have to give it back to the people that put it and put it out there in regards to the football field or other respective sports. And that's what it's all about. You just want to get your share. The top people in terms of, you know, the board of directors and the president can't be the only ones benefiting on the product on the football field, especially when the players are risking their lives. You know, it is a dangerous sport. These players, they, you know, have a small window, a majority of them, let's just say it's, you know, 60%, 70% that don't make it to the professional leagues, and they need to be compensated for their efforts on the field, especially when we're not talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, Ben, where these organizations and schools are just breaking even. These schools are making hundreds of millions of dollars on, whether it be on, you know, the ticket sales, the TV rights, the jerseys, you know, the concession stand. I mean, you name it, they're capitalizing on it. So why not trickle it down to the players that provide that value and provide that product? Again, it's going to be very difficult, in my opinion, for these coaches now moving forward, because this is another hurdle that they have to, you know, navigate through, and this is where we have to monitor it. And I said it before and I'll say it again, last thing, we need to get ahead of this, not just on the college level, we need to get ahead of this on the high school level, because it's just going to trickle down.
Yeah, and Joe, you bring up some really great points, right? And this is going to be a changing moment in college sports. It's just the way that this is going to work. Do not think the NCAA or the power conferences, the presidents and chancellors of these universities, are doing this out of goodwill, or a recognition finally of an aha moment where they're like, you know what, these college kids deserve to share in the revenue of what is a billion-dollar-plus industry on an annual basis. This is happening because the NCAA
NCAA has continued to have its model and its organizational structure questioned and, in fact, brought to the court of law, where its model of an antitrust organization always loses in front of the courts. And there was three outstanding lawsuits in the antitrust variety against the NCAA that probably was going to make the NCAA pay way more than $2.7 billion in damages. We're talking $10, $15, $20 billion if they were to lose in court. That's what led to these settlement agreements from the power conferences and the NCAA's Board of Governors. With that being said, it is a sign of the times that the NCAA does have some foresight here, Joe, to try to put some guardrails and restrictions on this ever-changing climate of college sports. Again, for the fan, is this going to change many things? More than likely not, or at least it should not. Do not think that your favorite university, your favorite athletic department, although there might be some fiscal challenges they have to come up with creative solutions to figure out, needs to stick out a bucket or their hand for a couple extra dollars or cents. The Big Ten remain the Power Five revenue leader, as reports state, in 2023, bringing in $880 million in the 2023 fiscal year alone. When I tell you that universities are good for it, that conferences are good for it, and they have the money, they do. Jim Delaney, now retired Big Ten commissioner for nearly a half decade, is still on the payroll as an advisor, Joe, for the Big Ten Conference, making north of $5 million a year. I say all of this not to cast shade at these individuals, universities, or conferences. That is not my intention. My only point is that everybody else in the collegiate athletic system has benefited and profited in a very large way to the tune of multiple millions and maybe billions of dollars over the span of college athletics. So now that athletes are getting to share in some of that revenue, only makes sense and was the direction all of this was heading for many, many years.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And you know what? It's maybe the only thing that the NCAA did right over the past 30 years, maybe, you know, that they actually have to pay and recognize that these are, you know, employees to a degree. I don't want to label it as that, but right, they deserve to be compensated for their hard work. It's one small step in regards to recognizing that, you know, they're responsible for the revenue that is generated and a reason why the NCAA even exists. So without these sports, Ben, then NCAA is non-existent.
It is very, very true, Joe. The NCAA is an organization that really overlooks everything that is happening, but there are so many branches of how the college sports system does play out. So Joe just brought it up. Are college kids now employees of the university? We'll discuss next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. Maybe you have seen the news. Maybe you have tried to read the reports yourself. We try to make sense of a landmark and watershed day in college sports that happened yesterday. For the first time, based on a settlement agreement between the NCAA's Board of Governors and all of the five power conferences, starting more than likely next year, colleges can directly share revenue with their athletes. So many people, Joe, might have a natural follow-up. Hold on. Does that make a college kid, a college athlete, now an employee of his or her university? Not quite, although it could get there, but not quite at this moment. College athletes are now trying to bargain for what would look somewhat like a players union, or to have a say in what would look somewhat like a collective bargaining agreement like we see at the professional level across whatever sports league it is, to have a bigger say in how that revenue is distributed and shared, because based on this settlement agreement, Joe, it's still at the behest of the university or athletic department. So no, College kids are not athletes or college kids are not employees, rather, excuse me, of their university at this stage. But again, with so much that has changed in the last 5 years in college sports, I would expect things in 3 to 5 years from now to also look very different.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this does play out, because a couple of things that come to mind for me in just thinking about the situation is, you know, let's just use Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, right? Last year's, you know, one of the top two quarterbacks in terms of the draft. In their respective programs, let's just say, you know, they're getting whatever, X for NIL deals. And, you know, the third stringer or the fourth string quarterback are only getting a certain amount. Could these players or star players across the board ask for more because they're more significant to their respective programs than, you know, a freshman or a player that's just backing them up at a certain position? How does that affect the locker room? How does that affect the continuity? How does that affect the coaching? These are all new factors, right? Let's use Nick Saban to a degree. Nick Saban would have benched anybody in a particular, you know, heartbeat if that player wasn't performing up to level because of certain, you know, Nick Saban standards or the Alabama way. Does that change now? If a guy's making, you know, $50 million or whatever, you know, $5 million a year from right, all these type of situations and you know, revenue sharing, and now we're going to have a union? These are all things that we have to discuss.
Yeah, I don't think that will really be the case, Joe, just based on how the distribution will go. We'll figure out exactly how much insert X star football player as compared to somebody on his team or maybe somebody even in a different non-revenue sport is going to make. Part of this is also the NCAA trying to take control of what has been a run rampant organization known as NIL. With how off the rails things got with name, image, and likeness, these will be presented under NIL type of deals in terms of that revenue sharing that happens between directly college university and college athletes. Still, the idea of pay for play is not there. Boosters having an involvement in paying out of their own pocket, that would still be illegal, and there is some hope under this settlement agreement, at least from the member institution side of things, that the actual, I don't know how I want to say this, the actual judgment of it all or the monitoring of illegal activities is picked up. The enforcement, that was the word I was looking for. The enforcement of these rules is picked up a little bit where punishments can be severe on the other side, because right now enforcement of NIL policy, investigation into NIL wrongdoing really is frankly non-existent in collegiate sports. So that's why, Joe, we have this system. It is not necessarily pay for play, although it will be deemed as such. And you bring up a really good point, Joe, about the power conference level. These are just power conferences on board as of yet, and the figures and the facts that we have shared throughout the show and that you might be reading about are really just power conferences. We're not talking Group of Five. We're not talking FCS. We're not talking any of the other leagues that are not considered those power conferences, the five mainstays that had been the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC, along with Notre Dame. What is it going to look like for them? Those are some questions there as well.
Yeah, there are. I mean, Notre Dame is the outlier, right? They used to be the brand. They used to be the team that everybody wanted to, you know, sort of emulate. And now they're looking for answers not tied to a respective conference.
Yeah, well, Notre Dame will be fine, Joe, just because they have the money from their own TV revenue deal. I'm talking more Group of Five FCS-level programs, at least in the football space. We'll continue the conversation because it is notable. Live right here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
So yesterday was a watershed landmark type day in the history of college sports. Again, pretty much the too long did not read version of this is that the NCAA and the power conferences have agreed to a settlement that now will allow actual colleges to directly pay and share revenue with their athletes. We've brought up a few questions that might be commonly asked to how this will all look, what it will all mean, and so forth moving forward, starting more than likely in the fall of 2025. Are college kids now employees of their university? No, not yet. Could we be getting there in a few years? Certainly so. Could we see things between college athlete unions and labor groups trying to collectively bargain with these conferences? Absolutely. Not there yet. This agreement, this settlement does not dictate that at this moment. So this is the power conference level. What about my favorite group of five school, like Kent State in the MAC or wherever it might be elsewhere, Jacksonville State in the ASA, whatever things look like, or CUSA, whatever it might be, the other conferences that are not at the power level? Well, Joe, they haven't necessarily agreed to the settlement, and we are not too sure at this moment what they will be at stake for. We know power conferences, at least estimated as of right now, with a number that could be ever changing, will be due to pay about $20 to $22 million annually to their athletes in that revenue sharing distribution. We don't know what that means for the group of five, the FCS, or the non-FBS conference power conference leagues around the country. We are not entirely sure what this agreement dictates or means for them.
Well, let me ask you a question. What happens to Oregon State and Washington State, the two schools that got screwed with the Pac-12? I mean, are they going to get as big of a cut, you know, on the outside looking in? I mean, that would be a real kick in the face to know that the other schools turn their backs on Washington State and Oregon State. They're not technically they're not part of a conference right now, right? Meaning even though we know they have ties to the Mountain West, I mean, what does that do to them? So you went from, in 1 year, you went from potentially, you know, taking part into this revenue sharing and you know, where the athletes are given $22 million or whatever, and now all those kids that, you know, were recruited and have committed to those schools now are just left to wonder what could have been. I mean, that is unbelievable. That they have somehow, some way, those two schools in particular need to be protected over the group of five more so than anybody else right now. I mean, that is ridiculous.
It's a really good point, Joe, because the Pac-12, because it still is functioning as of right now, because this academic year and the collegiate athletic season of 2023-24 has not come to a close just yet, the Pac-12 is still a living, breathing body and a conference at this moment. So they were one of the Power Five leagues that agreed to this settlement. But starting next year, the Pac-12 is no longer a thing, and Oregon State and Washington State, without their own TV revenue deal, Joe, are not going to be operating at the same level as any of the other Power Four conferences. I don't know if that has been determined yet, and it's a fair question to ask at this moment of what they could be on the line for and what they could be on the hook for when so much has been taken from them without really any of their own wrongdoing. So that's really where things stand right now. I will say this, Joe, because ultimately at the end of the day, in the last 4 years, each and every offseason, each and every summer, between football years, we have seen so much change in college sports that it's often difficult to wrap our heads around, right? In the last couple of years, we have seen so much change, whether it's NIL and transfer portal, completely getting rid of a system that we used to know, where we like player agency and their ability to freely move in the marketplace and get what they are worth. But of course, that was what it was epitomized to be and not what it has lived up to. It's this run rampant type of system that is completely broken. There's also conference realignment and all the TV revenue deals that we are seeing that have killed a lot of the traditional conferences that we have known geographically, rivalry-wise, passionate fan bases that we have grown up next to for the entirety of as long as we have known college football and college sports. I say all that, Joe, because in these wild, ever-changing times, and I'll just say this again, they are going to continue to change over the next few years. I do want to reiterate that although this is new, although this is different, although there will be some growing pains, once we get to the actual games, once we actually get to college football once again in 2024 and beyond, sure, the conferences are going to look different. Maybe some of your rivalry games are not on the schedule where they used to be, but the actual Saturdays in the fall, those should remain to be the same. And that's what the beauty of college football is, in my estimation. College football, the business model and product, is broken and oftentimes leaves us a little bit queasy. College football, the traditions and the actual games, that is still the beauty and the best of us and the best of what we do in the CFB level. So I would just say, although so much is changing, take a pause, take a beat, and I do say proceed with caution, because the actual games and those moments that we remember from an actual season, those will still live on and will be, frankly, for the most part, unchanged.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first couple of weeks of the regular season, Ben, I've talked about it, are as dynamic as we've seen over the past 15 college football seasons. They really have the ability to form the college football playoff, now expanded to 12 teams. We're going to see all the heavyweights, Georgia and Clemson, square off in week one, Michigan and Texas in week number two, and the list goes on and on. We talk about LSU playing USC and UCLA throughout the regular season. Those are games that you typically would not see each and every year, and it's going to be amazing. So I can't wait. You know, it seems like we're such a far way off, about 100 days away, and this is the fluff that sort of gets thrown in the mix. But, you know, once August rolls around and those kids are back in terms of fall camp, it's full throttle ahead. And,
yeah,
you know, this year probably more than any other is that once that season starts, we have so many talking points, right? You know, these games were ultimately dictated, but for a lot of these teams, that doesn't mean they're dead and buried anymore. Can they get off the mat and respond? That's the storyline in the early part of the season.
Joe, really well said, my man. Really, really well said that a lot of this is going to be changing, even in 2024. This is the first year that we see a lot of this change. Conference realignment in a large way. The new Big Ten, the death of the Pac-12, the new SEC with Oklahoma and Texas, the reimagined Big 12 and a 12-team college football playoff for a new format beginning in 2024. But once we get to those days, the way that we talk about the games, the way that we watch the games, the things that we love, those will still be the stories. If your favorite school knocks off your rival, that's going to be your memory. Not the day that the revenue model in college sports changed. The day that you contend for a Big Ten championship or an ACC championship, that's what you will remember. The weird and wacky things that we see throughout a CFB season that we look back and laugh on, like the moments that we saw with the Gravedigger play. Jalen Milroe knocking off Auburn. Auburn losing the week before to New Mexico State. Some of the crazy things that happened throughout a year. Deion Sanders in Colorado starting off so strong, only to get bludgeoned by Oregon a couple of weeks later. All of that, that's what we remember, and those are the main takeaways. Never forget the actual product itself. And when I say product, I mean the games. That rises above, that lives on, and that is still a beautiful thing.
I can't wait. And again, you know, the pageantry to see a lot of these teams. Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I mean, think about that. Just, you know, the landscapes. Biggest thing and the best thing about college football is that we will see games that potentially might not have taken place for like 50 years. I believe when you think about Penn State and UCLA, they didn't play from like 1976. I mean, these games never happened in the NFL, Ben.
And they're different, right? But they're fun. They're different, but they're marquee matchups. They're maybe not what we're used to, but again, that can bring a lot of fun as well. We'll continue to go around college football with some NFL news and notes up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC. Lisi, got to speak about what you're saying, a little bit of some of the college football news that we have starting in actual 2024 with games. When was the last time that Penn State and UCLA played?
1968, and they're going to square off on October 5th. I mean, that's what it's all about. And think about when Iowa played USC and or Wisconsin, Wisconsin and USC back in the Holiday Bowl. That meeting was the first one. That was about 5 years ago, but they didn't play for since 1966 as well. So this is the landscape now. This is great games and new rivalries and new games that we in a different setting that we would never see without conference realignment.
Absolutely so. And things are going to look different for sure, but things can still be very, very fun, very theatrical and memorable as well. It is crazy to think about what college football has in store in 2024. It is going to be a wild ride, but one that we will enjoy sharing with you here on Football Full Circle. Speaking of new things, Joe, 9 Friday night Big Ten football games this upcoming season, starting Friday, September 20th, between Illinois and Nebraska. One that really caught some social media fun on Wednesday when this schedule was announced was the game on Friday, October 25th. Rutgers makes the trip out to L.A. to take on USC. The game is slated to start at 11 p.m. Eastern time. A team from Piscataway, New Jersey will start a game at 11 p.m. Eastern. That's when it will be scheduled to begin. Of course, that's 8 p.m. local out at USC. So there's your new conference rivalry with the adjustments that we're seeing in the new Big Ten. USC and Rutgers, Big Ten after dark.
Are we going to stay up for that game? 2 o'clock?
100%.
In the morning, it'll probably end. I got to wake up at 5 just to do the show on Saturday. Who knows? We might have to sleep in studio for that, Ben.
I think so. Why don't we just go in-game live and just go right through, right? We'll just take it. We'll pick up at like 2:30 a.m. Eastern time and just roll into our 9 a.m. college football today. Why not? Get some live actions on the girls. We'll be in New Jersey. I don't know if we can live bet Rutgers and USC. It's a good point.
Gotta
think about it.
Can't.
Yeah.
We got to change that. We have to change that.
So let me just ask you a question here, Joe. When you think about USC, because our good friend on that show, College Football Today, thinks Lincoln Riley enters the Big Ten as one of the 3 best coaches in the conference and believes that USC is going to run roughshod over the Big Ten because of how dynamic that offense can be. But the odds makers have Southern Cal's win total for this upcoming year at 7.5, and the under has the juice. What's your outlook for the Trojans in 2024 in their first year in the Big Ten?
Well, again, I think they could get over that, Ben, just because maybe they could outscore teams, but it comes up to the defense. You know, that front 7 was atrocious, not just last year, but over the past couple of seasons. That's why Alex Grinch is no longer there. And if they're going to go up against the likes of Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State and Oregon, you need to stop the run effectively. And until they do that, I don't think they're a legitimate contender. Now, I need to be seen, I need to be told, and I need to see that in terms of the product this year. Maybe they could do it. I'm not going to say they can't, but you know, that's why they're 23-1. We never doubted Miller Moss and the type of talent that the quarterback position has held for Lincoln Riley, but when your defense is giving up 40 and your offense is scoring 35, well, guess what? You lose more games than you win, especially against, you know, better competition. So that's going to be the factor. I will say, and we talked about it on the show, they do have value at 20. If you want to take a flyer and say, you know, they're a lottery ticket, think about where USC was last year and the year before with Caleb Williams. Now you're getting them at 23-1. That's great value now.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I wouldn't bet it, Joe, because I don't think USC is going to contend for the Big Ten title this year. Very interested to see how Miller Moss does under Lincoln Riley. The quarterbacks that have played under Lincoln Riley have always had success. Caleb Williams won a Heisman Trophy. Jalen Hurts finished as a Heisman Trophy runner-up back when they were together at Oklahoma. Of course, he led both Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray to Heisman Trophies as well. Miller Moss, though, is not the star-studded recruit that Caleb Williams was. Not that he wasn't unrecruited, and he was a 4-star recruit in the greater Los Angeles area. I believe went to Servite, which is a high school that I know very well. But Miller Moss is expected to have some success. One of the best things I think that USC did this year is get Jaquavius Marks from Mississippi State to join them at USC. a really good back last year for the Bulldogs. Markstown makes his way to the Trojans. I think he will provide some relief in that backfield for USC. But no doubt, Joe, no doubt the biggest onus is on Danton Lynn, who left UCLA to go to his crosstown rival at USC to take the defensive coordinator job. It is his task to reinforce this USC defense that, frankly, let's call it a spade, was so disappointing the last few years. It kept a generational quarterback in Caleb Williams forever winning a Pac-12 title or playing in the college football playoff. That was on the defense, not on the quarterback.
No, I mean, you know, let's look at that game against Washington, right? They lose by 10. They scored 40 points in that game. Problem was they gave up 50, right? So you can't lose games like that. Again, we talk about what they could do from an offensive perspective. UCLA, I will say, from a front seven, that was the one thing I was very impressed with in terms of Chip Kelly's tenure for UCLA, is that they can run the football effectively, and they were very good, above average, top 30 in terms of rush defense for much of his tenure. Last couple of seasons, that front seven was much more physical, not just in the Pac-12, but beating the likes of LSU a couple of years ago, SEC caliber type of team. So if he could bring that to USC, they could go toe-to-toe. You got to get the recruits. You got to coach them up. I think their defense will be better, but will it be significantly better? Because we know what Michigan's going to bring to the table. We know that Jim Knowles is in year number three there, right? Or year number two. It's going to be a different defense for Ohio State, and now Penn State, they bring it every year, Ben.
Yeah, so let me just say this, too, about the other side of that matchup, USC and Rutgers. Rutgers win total is 6.5. The over has plus money. Give me the alt over on the Gers. Alt over 7.5 wins for the Scarlet Knights. My bold prediction, Rutgers wins 8 games in 2024. More up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Just a little bit more football news here on FFC. We have spent the majority of the day talking college football. So now let's go to the NFL. Some news and notes as we go around the National Football League, which was actually a rather busy week, Joe, as OTAs were happening all around the NFL. We got to see guys back on the practice field for the first time in a long time. Of course, they were optional. Not everybody was out there, but we did have some news. We had some players and coaches meet with the media, say some things, which is always a good thing to hear. And some news yesterday for Max Crosby and the Las Vegas Raiders, redoing his contract to give him a $6 million pay raise specifically for this season coming ahead in 2024. Max Crosby, Joe, has really kind of become the face of this Las Vegas Raiders organization with all the turmoil they have seen at the quarterback position, no longer being Derek Carr, not really having the answer in Jimmy Garoppolo. Now it's probably going to be Gardner Minshew to run the show. Max Crosby has kind of become the face of that defense on the side, now led by Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Max Crosby, I mean, a dominant defensive edge rusher and one of the vocals, you know, leaders of that locker room that really wanted Antonio Pierce to become head coach, right? So you make him happy, you sign him in regards to the extension, and hopefully that defense could take a next step. Let's not forget that, you know, they beat Kansas City in Arrowhead last year, Ben. They dominated that team as a double-digit underdog. They were opportunistic. That front seven shut down Pat Mahomes and got multiple quarterback pressures. If they could play that way over the course of a 17-game season, they should definitely be in the mix for a potential wild card. Asking them to win the division is going to be difficult, but with a veteran quarterback in Gardner Minshew, anything's possible.
I mean, Joe, when you look at the success they had last year under Antonio Pierce, they were great covering numbers. They won a bunch of games they were not expected to since Halloween when Josh McDaniels was fired. This team was really, really productive. And a lot of it, it seemed, was because of the embodiment of Antonio Pierce's persona and what he brought to this Raiders organization. That's how he won the head coaching job in Las Vegas. I think it was a good hire, making him an interim head coach, and then, of course, promoting him to that permanent title. Max Crosby will be the leader of that defensive side of the football. When you look at the Raiders and their win total for this upcoming season as well, not expected to do much, Joe, it would seem, in the AFC West, because right now the Raiders have that win total stacked up for 2024 at a number, as I track it down here, of 6.5, but the over does have the juice at minus 144. It is not the lowest win total in that division. That's the Denver Broncos, 5.5. The over also juiced for the Broncos.
Yeah, Broncos have an uphill battle. I still believe that it's a major rebuild. They have Bo Nix taking over, and how quick does he start? How quick can Sean Payton elevate his game? But it's not just Bo Nix. I mean, they lose Jerry Jeudy. They lose a lot of integral parts of that offense. The defense sort of wore down towards the end of the regular season again, and you're seeing a 5.5 win total. Are they better than Las Vegas? I don't believe they are. Are they better than Kansas City? Absolutely not. And I don't even think they're that much better than the LA Chargers now, because now you have a rookie going up against a veteran quarterback and you have Jim Harbaugh there. So again, they are the bottom feeders of the AFC West. Can they get over the 5.5? I think it's highly unlikely, Ben. I think Bo Nix could be a potential good fit, but you got to put veteran playmakers around them, elite speed, and until you have that, you can't really make an assessment. So again, I think there may be a 4 or 5 win football team at best.
Yeah, Broncos just finished up their first week of OTAs yesterday, and Sean Payton, in his second year in the Mile High City, did give some praise to Bo Nix. Good, saying he's good, or saying, how did he do? Good, he's farther along than most would be. We're talking about a player who's played 61 games in college. He's extremely smart. He's picked it up very quickly. But, of course, Bo Nix is one of the three quarterbacks it would perceive that is competing for the job of this Broncos organization in QB number one. Bo Nix alongside Jarrett Stidham, and of course, Zach Wilson. If Bo Nix is not the starter for the Broncos week number one, something has gone awry.
Yeah, I mean, again, I said it before. Did Sean Payton sign up for this type of coaching job where he actually has to coach up a rookie and potentially, you know, get this team to 5 or 6 wins so that he could set up 2025? I don't believe that. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, we will. Again, I am very curious to see how this Broncos team does this year, if it is around that win total of 5 or 6 games. Is Sean Payton back? You would think, with all the investment for 2025, and what exactly will Bo Nix do in his rookie campaign? He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. Have a wonderful holiday weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Tuesday on Football Full Circle at noon Eastern.